What is the difference between joy and happiness? Can a believer be unhappy and still be joyful? Welcome to the Good Word. We are continuing our series on the fruit of the Spirit, and today we are talking about joy. My conversation partners are fellow teachers at the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Aline Bauer and Paul Dibdahl. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Let's go to that first question now. Joy, happiness, unhappiness. Can we separate those out? Is it possible to be joyful while we are miserable?
Well, I think happiness can come from the word happening or circumstances. And oftentimes happiness is related to good circumstances. Things are going well. I've had a good day. And so I'm happy. Where I think joy is not related to circumstances. Joy is something that can be there even in difficult circumstances.
Uh-huh. So we can be joyful and unhappy then at the same time.
You don't sound convinced.
Well,
I don't like that the way you, unhappy. Let's rephrase that, but I'm not sure how.
Well, when you ask the question, Alden, I wonder if I'm missing missing something deep here, and I probably am, but isn't it kind of like wisdom and knowledge? We like to sometimes draw a distinction between those two somehow. Happiness as a more kind of surface reaction to circumstances, maybe like Aline said, an emotion that we feel, whereas joy, it seems to me, is a kind of quality that is associated with someone's life. It's a more durable sort of concept. So I didn't really sound convinced, but I think I am convinced that joy is different in that way.
Yeah, joy is something which is a more secure feeling, may not be screaming and hollering and shouting with glee, but there is a sense that God's presence is there. Maybe what C.S. Lewis, in the title of his little autobiography, Surprised by Joy, where he wants to separate out when the real stabs of joy are rare, but they happen and they come. But I also think there's more of an enduring sense of how we deal with joy as well.
Is it, I don't know, a little word picture here, a sort of inner sunshine? Is that what joy is? Regardless of the weather, it's a kind of inner hopeful sort of.
Well, and I think that comes from a sense of the consciousness that we belong to a God who loves us. So even when our circumstances may be beating against us and we're thinking, why is all this happening? If our core, in our core, we say, I have a God who loves me and who is with me, that produces not this rambunctious exuberance, maybe, but a settling sense of joy.
In that sense, Celine, I think it's a little bit like a good marriage. You know that if everything falls apart, you know when you go home you have at least one friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a wonderful sense of security and leads to a overarching joy, even if the circumstances of the day may be pretty miserable. Now, there's another aspect here. The stories of Jesus in the gospel don't put a lot of smiles on Jesus' face. Now, I know that the video production where you have the laughing Jesus, but it doesn't really match the biblical accounts. I think the only place in any of the Gospels where it says that Jesus rejoiced is when the 70 came back. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe ties into what you just suggested, Paul, because it says he rejoiced in the Spirit, smiling inside. Mm-hmm. But outside it was maybe not that obvious. So how do we explain the fact that Jesus' life seemed to be, could I say it strongly, bereft of obvious joy?
A man of sorrows.
A man of sorrows, yeah.
Yeah, to me this is a really good question. And that's sort of my intro to say that I'm not sure that I have a good answer. I do wonder, I think in general, and maybe it's a cultural thing. I remember when I was in Asia, working with a group of Vietnamese people actually, and at one of their baptisms, there was such a sort of a somber expression on the person's face. And I'd said something to them afterwards. It almost bothered me. And I said, you know, this is a time of, it should be a time of great happiness and joy. I may have used that word even. And he said, I am very joyful. He said, but in our culture, at moments like this, it's not something that you even allow to bubble out in some kind of exuberance. It's an internal thing. He said, it would not have been proper for me to express that joyful emotion in the way that I expected. And I suspect that there's something like that working here as well, that just because we don't read about people laughing or, leaping around very often, we should conclude that there was no joy.
Well, and I think we have examples from the life of Christ that indicate he had to be joyful, or, I mean, for example, children enjoying him. You don't see children wanting to be around someone who's sorrowful and mournful. And he was invited to parties.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't invite people to parties who sit in the corner with a doleful look on their face, you know.
In fact, the reputation that Jesus was the party person.
That's right.
And John the Baptist was the one who was grim.
Right. And he says, you know, yes, they're celebrating because the bridegroom's with them. You know, there'll be a time later. And I've been impressed in my classes. We've been studying the book of Luke, the theme of joy in Luke. I mean, it begins, the bookends of Luke are really joy. You know, the angels come and say, I have great tidings of joy. And the book ends with the disciples going out with great joy back to Jerusalem. And in that, you have, of course, the parables where the lost are found, and there's always a celebration of joy. So I think we can find it. And one reason I wonder if it is not as evident is if it were that way, would people, there's a lot of sorrow in people, there's a lot of hurting in people, and if they read that and thought, well, does Jesus identify with my sorrow? Does he understand my hurt?
And I think that if a person, I mean, if you come into a situation where you're all cheerful, obviously cheerful, but you walk into a place where deep sorrow is there,
yes,
there is an uncomfortable juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think there can be kind of a quiet confidence,
a
quiet joy, which is not exuberant, which allows them to live with sorrow at the same time.
Right.
Let's take a look at the celebration of salvation. You mentioned there the stories of the lost.
Mm-hmm.
In each of the three stories there, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost boy, there is celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When the sheep is found, come with me, celebrate, because that which I've lost has been found, same way with the lost coin. Mm-hmm. And with the lost boy, even in the face of the angry brother, the father's comment is really quite amazing. We had to celebrate and rejoice. Because this brother of yours was dead, has come to life, he was lost, and has been found.
And I think it's so sad that so few people realize that entering into the kingdom of heaven is a celebration. You know, I love those examples in primarily Luke that there's joy, there's a party. There's a party going on, and we're invited.
You know, I've wondered often about the joy in heaven when a sinner is found and knows that the sinner has been found. I suspect that the Lord is going to take into account all kinds of difficult circumstances, and people will be in the kingdom who didn't even expect to be there. But there is some special joy when that which is lost has been found and the person knows that he's been found.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if sinners can recognize that, it is great joy in heaven. And among the community of the saints as well.
It's sort of like that Old Testament story where Elisha prays that God will open the eyes of his servants so he can see the army, you know.
Yes.
And it's almost as though God open our eyes that we can see the celebration in heaven when we come to you. You know, I mean, I just, that's an exciting thought.
And to think that, to think that we're valuable enough and important enough that heaven would rejoice, that there was a party, so to speak, in our honor. That's an amazing thing to think of. Angels and even God rejoicing over us.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
You know, you almost wonder if, you know, we each have guardian angels, if the guardian angel up there gets a special cake or something like that. That's kind of a neat thought.
Yeah. I like that idea.
A banner with our name
That's
on it.
That's right. That's right. So I like that.
Well, That ties in with the next question I wanted to ask, or maybe it's just a comment. 1 Peter 1:8-9 talks about the believer rejoicing with an indescribable and joyous and glorious joy over his own salvation.
Hmm.
We've talked about God rejoicing over the sinners, but here now is the sinner who is rejoicing over his own salvation. Mm-hmm. And as I've read, especially the Old Testament, it seems to me that there, and New Testament as well, but especially the Old Testament, that there seems to be great joy over the recognition of the forgiveness of mm-hmm. sins. In other words, when you know that your sins have been yeah. forgiven, that is just simply a cause for great joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that falls through. Thankfulness can lead to joy, you
yeah.
know, and that
yeah.
would fall under the forgiveness of sins, the gifts of God, you know, so many things.
Yeah, if I could pick a word that I would like to characterize my life by, it would be gratitude or thankfulness, mm-hmm. you know, because it is... It's such a wonderful feeling when you're overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude. In fact, as someone said, the saddest thing for the atheist is when he is really thankful about something but has no one to thank.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about another more difficult topic, but one that we need to be aware of. Joy in the pleasures of sin. Because in Hebrews 11, it talks about Moses choosing not to enjoy the pleasures of sin. So apparently there is some joy connected with sin.
Or pleasure, at least.
Yeah. If there wasn't, people probably wouldn't head that direction so often.
Yeah, that could very well be. I've often said that I've never been tempted by cottage cheese because I had way too much cottage cheese, you know, in academy, enough to last me well through the millennium.
Yeah.
So cottage cheese is not a temptation, but there are other
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
There are temptations.
Well, and notice in Galatians 5, where Paul is talking about the flesh here after, you know, 17, he calls them desires of the flesh, which indicates there is this natural part of us that desires that goes after that.
And how do we cauterize that? See, here comes Moses, you know, choosing to suffer with the people of God mm-hmm. rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin. How did he make that decision? Flesh that out any so that we can help ourselves when we see something that is really tempting.
Well, I think one of the things we can do, you know, the scripture is a story, and a lot of it is about a story of people who didn't choose sin versus those who did. And as we look at, you know, Paul says later, you reap what you sow. And if we take their stories and recognize that's where that leads, hopefully that can be a bit of a warning to us.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Hebrews chapter 11, where it does talk about the pleasures of sin, but the next phrase, I think, is important. Pleasures of sin for a short time is what the NIV says. And I think that's the pleasures of sin are the kind of flash in the pan sort of pleasures that over the course of a lifetime, generally not even that long, they lose their pleasure and they turn into something destructive and painful, and leads to great sorrow. So, I realize we aren't maybe primarily logical people, but it is helpful sometimes to think, all right, so this pleasure, what's going to be, what will be the cause? And that might be helpful in turning us away.
Well, our time is just about up, so we'll have to save the rest of our questions until next time. My thanks to Aline and Paul, and also to our program engineer, Michael White, and to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Alden Thompson. We'd like to remind you that Good Word is available more often and in more places. If you would like to have access to it again, simply go to the Positive Life Radio website, plr.org. Under Programs, you can find Good Word. You can listen to your heart's content. You can also order a CD if you wish. All available on the Positive Life Radio website, plr.org.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.